Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Look, I was right. Indeed, as our buddy Waggy, who is on the other side of the planet, confirmed, the Earth did continue to rotate, at least from the northern hemispheric perspective, into the waning light of a coming winter sun. And we're here this evening, or this morning, or this afternoon, or whatever it is, wherever you are. Good evening, denizens of Norblap 12. Some 60 or 70 million years from now, when this signal lands on you. How you doing? This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find access, to gain access, which, interestingly enough, is in fact free, to the chat room. Nice little group already forming up. We're not ones to stand on ceremony. Everybody's not right there at the beginning of the program, because you know, we're progressives, we're liberals, we wander in when we feel like it. We're not all organized and, you know, authority-driven. I think we kind of learned a little bit about that last night now, didn't we? But good evening, Carol Baker. Good to see you back in the room. I'm glad the, I think you were just allergic to Election Day, and maybe your body sensed what was happening. That weren't no flu bug. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont. Good evening, Lance. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Sergi. Good evening, Texas T. And, of course, as ever, good evening to indefatigable, longtime chat room moderator and moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, Sparky. And come on by the chat room. We'll all feel better if we sort of address our miseries together, such as they are or aren't. Now, I know that there has been a lot of hand-wringing. It has been a tough 24 hours. I've been part of it. I've felt that. But I want us to engage in a little conversation tonight. I really do. I mean, and when I say engage in conversation, this does not mean that I sit here and talk and y'all sit there and go, hmm. It means I want us to have a dialogue. It means, you know what? It means I want to hear, I would like to hear, I humbly request to hear from some folks who are not necessarily prone to calling the program. Because I know, there are old statistics out there about what the ratio is of people who call radio programs versus the ratio of people who listen, and it's stunning. I'm not saying if you're a regular caller, stay away. But I'm saying if you are not a regular, jump into the conversation. Because nobody on our side of the fence, progressives, liberals, Democrats, decent human beings, is particularly happy today. And I think we should discuss it. I think I went through, what is it, all seven phases in about 15 minutes last night. Some of us looking at the chat room would appear to still be in the anger phase, and that's okay, too. But what the hell? Were you operating under the assumption that this is some sort of noble experiment in Republican government? Where elections happen and the best person wins? Really? I hope the heck not. Not with Citizens United. Not with an absolute flood tide of filthy Koch brothers money. Not with Karl Rove and his Crossroads Kiss My Ass operation still moving freely across the planet and not in some prison somewhere. This is an empire. And what happened yesterday is what happens periodically in empires. Empires do go periodically nuts. And that is, in a word, what happened in a large part of the country yesterday. But it's also a self-inflicted wound. The part that really, really eats at me is when I think about the good that could have been done with those billions of dollars that were poured into the advertising for the election campaign that are now just sitting quietly in the pocket of some right-wing media owner, for the most part. I mean, you've heard the old adage about the little baby that was so ugly, his mama had to put a pork chop around his neck just to get the dog to play with him. That's us. Because of the way that the game is rigged, our side, to the extent we have any money, we have to pay the other side to run our ads for us. And the problem is then compounded when the people who are deciding what ads to run turn out to be a bunch of freaking losers who would gladly pay a nickel 150 years ago to follow the signs this way to the egress, having paid their nickel. We're dealing with a broken system, pure and simple. No, wait, stop. We're not dealing with a broken system. Look, yesterday the system worked great. And no, I'm not, this is not that sort of mealy-mouthed BS you get from elected representatives who say, well, once again, the electoral process has proven that the system works. Bull! No! The system worked yesterday because of the outcome that it delivered the outcome that it was designed to deliver. 600,000 people disenfranchised in Texas. Tens of thousands disenfranchised in Georgia, in North Carolina, in all the various and sundry states where voter suppression was the order of the day. Wisconsin. A for-profit media that just said, screw it, I quit, we give up. We're not, objectivity, my butt. Over at the New Republic, I read an article earlier today where an analysis was done of the number of stories in the Des Moines Register, the vaunted Fourth Estate Beacon of Iowa, Stan, and how many stories they did about the lunatic crap that just orbits the head of Joni Ernst, like the old video for Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, versus how many they ran about verbal gaffes by Bruce Braley. It wasn't even close. very few of the professional pundits out there, including the ones, and I've deliberately tried to stay away from them, including the ones who say, the problem is the Democrats. The Democrats needed to reach across the aisle more. And by God, if that one in our White House had been a little more leadershipy, well, we probably would have gotten something done and it wouldn't have worked out. Oh, shut up. Go and change your armor. Note coming in from Carol saying, my friend is a registrar at a local college. All of the students came in today bitching about their college loans. When asked if they voted, they couldn't take their eyes off their cell phones as they muttered, no, and then blamed our generation. Depending on which generation, Carol and I are of the same generation, I think. And I also got to pondering about those, because we talked some about this on the program last night, those elderly, the 65-plus voting demographic. You know what? An 80-year-old voter yesterday, an 81-year-old voter yesterday, was born in 1933. An 80-year-old voter was born in 1934. That means, at best, that voter remembers 2-3 years? No, not even that, of the Great Depression. The Second World War was a thing that happened during his or her toddler and childhood. The first president they probably remember was Eisenhower, and all they remember about him is I like Ike. Okay, 70-year-old voter, 1944. 60-year-old voter, 1954. The elder voters yesterday are people who were rock-ribbed Republicans when they got their asses handed to them in the Goldwater debacle. There's a lot of things that contributed to yesterday. Some of it is the stay-home factor. How much of the stay-home factor was engendered by the people who say, well, you know, they're really just the same parties. I mean, Ralph Nader done told me that back in 2000. No difference between Democrats and Republicans. They're just the same parties. They're all rich. They're all corrupt. Maybe. Maybe that's correct. We got a couple of years to find out. And find out we shall. Precisely, Carol. She notes in the chat room, the bulk of the voters were white, over 60, and circling the drain. What do they care if the social safety net is slashed? They'll get theirs. There were those, though, who weren't. And I feel bad for the over 60s who weren't, who went and voted their progressive values and have never given up to this day. I think about Boss Man Wayne and others like him. They say that people tend to get more conservative as they age. That's a lie. Because about the most progressive human being I know is Boss Man Wayne, who worked his ass right off in this election. And one of the Democrats for whom he worked the hardest, guess what? Won his election. And then there's the candidates. I guess this is a kind of a post-mortem, isn't it? But, the candidates sucked. Last night after the program, I tweeted, because I was feeling clever and angry at the same time, which is always a dangerous combination. Mistakes will be made. I tweeted, as I have said here on the program, that West Virginia failed an IQ test yesterday. But because I don't just say things, and because I tend to think about the things I say, I later backed up on that. I mean, it was a funny thing to say. You know, if you voted Republican in West Virginia yesterday, please put down the sharp objects and buy yourself some Velcro shoes. Because you can't be trusted with shoelaces. You might hurt yourself or somebody else. It's cute. But an IQ test, by definition, has to have some right answers on it. Now, I don't know about where you were, but I can tell you for an absolute rock-solid fact, there weren't any right answers on my ballot. I had the same old, tired, tawdry Democrats. I had a bunch of crazier-than-sprayed-roach Republicans. And every one of them had made a point of vowing to either go to Washington or Charleston or the county seat and fight for Coe. Because Coe is our heritage. So, in light of the fact that ours is a family commune congregation that is intensely progressive in nature, I would like to point out something that I hope will serve as a bit of a solace, surcease of sorrow, as Poe put it. Progressives didn't lose yesterday. Liberals didn't lose yesterday. You know why? Because we weren't on the ballot. I'm sure there were some third-party types out there, and, you know, they got waxed like a basketball court. But that's because they're third parties. Third-party Constitution Party people got waxed like a basketball court. Third-party libertarians got waxed like a basketball court. Progressives didn't lose. Because progressives didn't run. Because those geniuses who are professionally paid a small fortune to go out and lose and get paid whether they win or lose, you know, the Democratic campaign consultants, I want to be one of those. I'll run your campaign for you. It's only going to cost you a couple of million dollars, and hey, if we lose, well, we'll be getting the money up front, and I'll be way out of town after you've had your ass handed to you, because we're gonna run on Coe. We're gonna convince the rubes that if we can just get you elected, them little Keebler elves down under the mountains, they're just gonna get busy making more coal. That they've stayed away from their coal making Keebler elf activities because of that one in our White House, you know, that Kenyan Muslim usurper. And if we just stick our fingers up in the air and wave them and say, "Hey, Kenyan usurper!" Well, them Keebler elves will get back busy making more coal under the ground. And then they laugh all the way to the bank. There's certainly, you know what, none of the campaign consultants who tanked Natalie Tennant's campaign are crying this evening. None of the millionaire consultants who gave such brilliant advice to Alison Lundergan Grimes are weeping. They're pricing stemware. They're fretting over the clarity of a diamond. Okay? We didn't lose. because we didn't run. Now, what does it say about the fact that we don't run? I mean, Alan Grayson got returned to the House of Representatives. Yay! And he don't get much more progressive than old Alan. John, don't ever tell me that I have said the same thing that Sean Hannity has said. Please, we must have respect for one another. So, let's get over it. And let's understand that empires behave like empires behave. They don't behave like experiments in Republican government. And, of course, President Not Sure stepped to the podium today and stood behind the microphone and said, I'm open to good ideas no matter who it comes from in the Congress. We've got work to do. And what the hell else are you supposed to say? I got real tired real quick of the, this is a clear repudiation of Barack Obama's policies. Shut up! It was a clear repudiation of Barack Obama's melanin content in his skin. Coupled with the historic fact in this country that midterm elections generally don't go well for presidents. But in all defeats reside also the possibility of victory. And we have that here. The Democratic Party, such as it is in West Virginia, Stan, and yes, I get to add the Stan to my state's name, oh joy. The head of the West Virginia Democratic Party, well, he's not having any of this blame game. He's an old fixer by the name of Larry Puccio. He's a dear, dear bosom buddy of Joe Manchin. I have seen that man so drunk he had to be propped up in the corner. Here, then, after an absolute historic ass-whipping, is what Larry Puccio said. We know the people of West Virginia, whether Democrat, Republican, or Independent, were not pleased with Barack Obama's policies, and they came out and showed it today. I think they've hurt the people of West Virginia in doing so, but they sent a very powerful message. I didn't think when it got down to the legislative level it would resonate, but it clearly, obviously did. Yeah. Larry put out a press release, Puccio. West Virginia was no exception in the tidal wave that swept the entire country on Election Day due to dissatisfaction with many of the president's policies. Which ones? I just want to know, which ones? In West Virginia, it was his policy of actually letting the EPA do the job that the EPA is charged by law with doing and would be criminally negligent if they didn't do. Like the CO2 stuff, the Supreme Court ordered the EPA to issue the CO2 regs. And if they hadn't, they could have been the EPA could have been hauled back into court on a charge of a little something called contempt. Okay? There's a price to be paid when you get your butt whipped in an election, and if Larry Puccio was anybody but Larry Puccio, and if Larry Puccio was actually a Democrat, but he's not because he's a friend of Manchin, and no Manchin has ever actually been a Democrat, he'd quit and take his little creatures with him. But apparently he's not going to go. He's going to have to be forced. So the question remains then, what do I do? And what do you do? I mean, you're not in West Virginia, but I am. Some of us are. A few of us are. Do we say screw it and run over to the mountain party and just keep losing for the next 150 years? Or, with a historic ass-handing, do we move in and create an insurgency inside the party? I mean, the teabaggers seem to be fairly successful doing it to their party. Or are we too nice? Well, that wouldn't be according to the Marquess of Queensberry rules. And we need to have a consensus-based decision-making meeting about setting a schedule, a time frame for determining when we might have a meeting to determine whether or not... I personally think it should be hell among the yearlings. And you march in and you start getting real blunt. Joe Manchin, you want to come back and run for governor? You're not doing it as a Democrat. You better do it as a Republican. Because you've been one all along. Larry Puccio, follow thy master. Because even if we wind up getting our asses handed to us for another 20 years, we will at least have a party that stands for what the party is supposed to stand for. And by the way, Natalie Tennant. Natalie, you probably want to run for governor in a couple of years, too. If that's the case, you need to understand that if you're going to run as a Democrat, we're not going to have any more of this coal wallering.
Oh, I love me some coal.
And Nick Rahal, you've gone off to your retirement, buddy, after 19 terms. 19 terms in the Congress of the United States. That's a pretty good run. That's 38 years. Congratulations. In the golden years of your retirement, I hope, Representative Rahal, that you will ponder how utterly humiliating it was to abase yourself, a sitting, tenured member of the House of Representatives, rolling around waiting to either be kicked or scratched by the coal industry, when you could have been standing up for your poisoned constituents and being a true man for the history of West Virginia, instead of being simply another name that will be forgotten as quickly as you shuffle off this mortal coil. Plenty to think about. Plenty to ponder. But the one thing we best not do, and should not do, is somehow make the wrongful assumption that there's something wrong with progressives in this country, because there just weren't many running. Natalie Tennant was no progressive, no matter how hard Elizabeth Warren tried to convince people she was. Neither was Alison Lundergan Grimes. Mary Landrieu, still fighting for her political life in Louisiana, is no progressive. Mark Udall could have been, but wasn't. On and on and on. So, hopefully that will, that gives us a little bit to think about. I mean, that's just a few of the thoughts that have been banging around in my head all day. I'm not going to walk around like somebody who took a beating, because I didn't get a chance to get beat. Because there was nobody running on the ballot who shares my values, my principles. I knew going into yesterday that whoever won, it was the coal industry was going to have another sort of dead-eyed mouthpiece in the Senate. Interesting question just came in. Could Ashley Judd have beaten Turtle Face in Kentucky? Marty wants to know. There's no pat answer to that. We know that Turtle Face's little war room meeting, in which they planned to smear her as a crazy lady for having once sought mental health services, was enough to run her out of the race. So I doubt if she could have beaten McConnell. Allison Lundergan Grimes could have. But she didn't want to. She didn't have the gut desire to. She didn't have the fire in the belly to. Because somebody with fire in the belly doesn't get beaten up by the likes of Chuck Todd. So, just a few things to think about. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. Let's go to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay, Jim. How about you?
Well, not too real pleased about what happened. I expected it, really. And I think it's an example of political neuropathy and also exsanguination, because yesterday, to me, was simply another step of a bloodletting operation that was performed upon the 99% of this country.
Well, I mean, but it's not like West Virginia was healthy in the first place, was it?
No, I'm not talking about West Virginia. I'm talking about the entire nation, because this thing was just not for West Virginia. It was almost continental United States.
Well, I mean, can you find me a place where a progressive was replaced with some wild-eyed teabagger?
I don't know of any progressives that were really running.
I think I rest my case. Republican, and we've seen this before.
QED.
We saw this in 2010. Republican Light got beaten by Republican Reilly.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, this was just a money thing. I mean, for one congressional seat in this state, $11 million
in this poor, beat-up state
were put in for Nick Rahal's seat against him. $3 million here, $8 million from the Koch brothers. They spent $11 million to put his opponent in Nick Rahal's place. I'll tell you, a little hush money can do a lot of talking or a lot of harm. And that's
sure.
Exactly.
And yesterday, Jim, was a display not of political acumen, but of monstrous ambition. And a desire for control and influence and power that can be measured on no device known to humankind.
Well, as I said before, here again, Wall Street and K Street beat Main Street. Speaking generally, but that's just how I feel. I went to bed at 7:30 last night when I, realized from the first things that I began to hit C-SPAN, this was going to come out. And they were all saying how close it was going to be and this, that, and the other. It wasn't close at all.
No.
It was just a monstrous, ass-whipping that was bought and paid for. And there was no way that, any person who represented any form of decency or political conscience could have made it. I mean, how many candidates won? Two? as far as the whole thing is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, there was one old line friend of Cole Democrat. Well, I mean, here's how weird it got. A Republican carried this county in which I live, and you know a little bit about it, for the first time in generations.
Well, I was speaking it nationally, but nonetheless, on CNN this morning, Chris Cuomo got his ass handed to him by Bernie Sanders.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't.
You did. Oh, yeah. And Bernie Sanders has no illusion about what these people are going to try to do. And they're not interested in any type of cooperation or rough or small or anything like that. I mean, it's going to be the same gridlock that has been going on for so long. And that's basically what Bernie Sanders said. And, you know,
well, Bernie's not going to try to shine anybody on, left, right, or center, I don't think.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, they nearly really got into it. And, Bernie Sanders, just hit the for-profit media one below the belt when he talked to Chris Cuomo. I mean, Cuomo was just absolutely gobsmacked and then had to say, oh, well, we want to have you back on the program and this, that, and the other. And Cuomo couldn't wait to end that interview because he realized he could really stir up the hornet's nest.
Well, it's going to be, now we spend the next 2 years talking about what happens in November 2016, I suppose, Jim.
Well, I don't know about I think there are a lot of things they're going to try to do in those 2 years in which they have the House and the Senate, and I really believe that they will try to, and I believe these people for what they're saying. I mean, McConnell said they want to repeal Obamacare, and if they can do it, they will. If they can resort to, if there isn't satisfaction on their part, I fully believe they'll try to impeach this president if he tries to oppose.
Listen, I think that's already in the works. I saw a question earlier today. How soon do we get impeachment proceedings? And the question is, just as soon as the first order of business in any new Congress is the organizing of the leadership structures. So John Boehner has to be reelected, and Mitch McConnell has to be reelected, and Ted Cruz has already announced that, by God, well, you know, that Mitch McConnell may not necessarily get his support, and Ted Cruz thinks he's a teabagging kingmaker. So don't think for a minute, remember how Ted Cruz tried to destroy the government of the United States during the shutdown?
Mm-hmm. Certainly do.
And for some reason or another, that man still has credibility. Had a Democrat done something like that, he would not even be on the on the toilet swabbing. He wouldn't be the last backbencher on the toilet swabbing committee.
Well, you know, stupidity always has a habit of getting its way.
But Ted Cruz, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be the head of the Senate Science Committee.
As I said before, stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And so
you know, now I've heard it said, especially by right-wingers, that the only people talking about impeachment are people on the so-called left. And, of course, I always answer that with the same phrase, what left? Huh? But that being the case, I don't think it's necessarily so. I mean, I've just seen on Facebook postings all day long from people here in West Virginia. Well, I hope we hurry up and impeach that some bitch.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me at all. I've been hearing that ever since he was elected. And the resentment of having a black man in the White House.
And frankly, the you know, John Boehner has no independent power. He has the power that he is allowed to have. And there are power vacuums aching to be filled. And we need and in the dawn of the new Congress, we will have to we'll have to wait and see, of course. But in the dawn of
Do you think that Boehner and McConnell are going to be reelected to their positions of power?
Oh, I think they will, but they'll have to make concessions. Among other things, Boehner no longer has to worry about Eric Cantor because Eric Cantor screwed himself. He wasn't, imagine that. I mean, just imagine that. He wasn't sufficiently conservative for teabaggers in Northern Virginia.
Well, you talk about concessions. You can only imagine to whom those concessions must be made. And you're talking to the extreme crazy teabagger people in the Republican Party.
So my money says, and I ain't got any, that impeachment will be real. Now remember, I mean, there doesn't have to be an agreement between the House and the Senate. The House acts independently on the impeachment. That's the indictment presentation to the grand jury, and the trial happens in the Senate.
I understand the purpose.
I know you do, but many people may not. So there's nothing any Democrat can do to stop it. There's no filibuster in the House.
Right.
And as we saw yesterday, there is no price to be paid. So there's nothing to stop them.
Exactly.
And the teabaggers and their weird little low information voter followers will reward them richly. And certain demographics just won't come out. And the ones that do will find it harder and harder and harder to vote in 2016. So, you know, I may be entirely wrong, but if we don't have impeachment proceedings underway or investigatory committees leading to it underway by April at the latest, I will be surprised, Jim.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's going to be the ultimate coup d'etat. And after that, many of the things that the president has tried to do will go by the board, and they will try to disgrace him as much as they possibly can. I mean, these people literally have blood on their teeth.
Like that
crazy woman in Iowa talking about, I'm going to squeeze. I mean, the for-profit media last night, one of them said, well, they're feeling a bit feisty. No, these people are a pack of bloodhounds chasing a fox. That's exactly what's in their mind.
Right. And anybody familiar with the revolting process you just compared it to knows that when the pack gets to the fox, the hunters have to physically restrain the dogs to keep them from tearing the fox to pieces.
Oh yeah, of course. And then, you know, there are going to be so many of them out there waiting to get bloodied as they normally do in the process of a fox hunt for the person who's on the fox hunt for the first time. So there it is. But like I say, this is a case of political neuropathy and exsanguination, a bloodletting operation performed upon the body of this country. And that's the only thing I can come up with as an assessment.
I understand. Jim, thank you very kindly.
Well, you take care.
I'm going to try.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too terribly far away from here. One other thing to note, and again, I sort of put this thought out there last night. By the way, the Gizmo line is now open, 304-663-4676, and the other line, of course, 304-574-8178, is also open. Both are equally available to you. And, you know, I'm inclined, I want, And again, I encourage people who are not prone to calling the program, pick up the phone. Let's have a conversation, because you've got to be as miserable as we are. But one other thing to bear in mind. The Washington State Senate, have I got this right, went Republican last night. That got me thinking. And the nature of my thought was this. How much of the country did the Koch brothers manage to bring under their iron-fisted sway last night? Yeah, a lot. With that being the case, well, California, Oregon, Washington, you're next, because you're all that's left. There's damned little left of this country to wreck but you. As John Wayne hollers in True Grit, fill your hands, you son of a bitch. Because they're coming. And they'll bring the long knives. There's nothing standing between you. All your borders, all your bulwarks have been breached. Progressives progressives along the West Coast have a little, maybe a year to prepare for an onslaught, a political onslaught of massive proportions. Jeremy responding to something that Jim said. He said, Bernie Sanders has never been one to suffer fools gladly, be they Vermonters or otherwise, and that is the truth. Devin observing, people are made to be so ignorant that they are ignorant of their ignorance by design. It starts in school. If you conform, you succeed. If you think or ask questions, you're out, flunked, or off to the school to prison pipeline. The same applies in the working world, but with the conform or starve paradigm instead. And that too is true. We've got callers on the line. Let me note something I didn't earlier, because I like to make sure that we get thanks out to the people who help. We closed the program last night, $30 down for fundraising, and I want to thank Robert very, very kindly for closing that gap earlier today. And I want to thank Grant and Philip for getting us started on this evening's fundraising. I can happily say that we are only $120 away from our fundraising goal for this evening, which, if you would care to help us meet it, would be greatly appreciated. 12 at 10, 24 at 5, you know the drill. But $120. And I'm going to say this, because I don't really beat the drum that much along these lines. What good was the for-profit media last night? Based on what I saw, damn near next to not. None at all. And yet we create a conversation here. Yeah, thank you for your agreement, Devin. None. We create a conversation here and try to do it on nothing more than $150 a night. $150 would not buy 1 second of advertising time on in the for-profit media, or $150 wouldn't buy a goddamn centimeter column, a column centimeter in the New York Times. But here, $150. Gets anyone who wants to the opportunity, and it's $150 among the community, not per person or per call, and there's no pay to play here. $150 a night, and any human being who wants to can pick, who isn't a right winger, who isn't a teabagger, who isn't a libertarian, bircher, birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, is welcome to participate in this conversation. We don't let the birchers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, libertarians, and Republicans participate because they got all kinds of other places they can. And they're more than welcome to go there. Go tell your troubles to Michelle Malkin, you little weirdos. But I'd say that, like a few other programs, especially our dear friend Malloy, my good friend Rick Smith, there's not a better setup in media. If you want to get involved in the program, again, the number is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. That number's tied up right now. The Skype line is 304-574-8178. You don't have to have Skype for that. It's just a phone that's attached to a Skype account. 304-574-8178. That one's tied up too right now. But as we go through the numbers, call in. I welcome this conversation. And so anyone who wants to help us keep the conversation going day after day, week after week, month after month, well, every night's a fundraising opportunity. And we got $120 that needs to be filled this evening, and then, you know, tomorrow is another day. Let's go to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Did I call it on the Skype line by chance?
Well, I mean, it's attached to a Skype. Yeah, you're fine. It's good.
Okay. I just got you on my speed dial, and I just punched it. I didn't know which number I dialed. If you don't mind, I'm gonna put my wizard hat on for a second.
Do please, and get out the tattered velvet robe while you're at it.
Yeah, grab my staff and wave it around. How much you want to bet that one of the first things they do is repeal that Obamacare?
Oh, sure.
Oh yeah, I can see it.
They may do that six times before lunch on their first day in office.
Oh yeah, I can see it now. I mean, I've listened to a lot of stuff today on the various sundry networks and what have you, and it seems like half the betting is that the next 2 years is going to be just showing themselves attacking the president. There's even conversation now that one of the first things they're going to do is they're going to completely eliminate the filibuster so they can just ram through any legislation they want to force Obama to keep vetoing it, so they can point to him and say, see, it's his fault. He's the reason why things are going bad. It's gonna be so fun to just watch it just burn.
I expect nothing. It's gonna be, and this is frankly where I get a little bit queasy. I wonder. Barack Obama has issued two vetoes in his entire presidency. One was a clerical error. One was a veto of a clerical error, and the other was a veto regarding notaries and home mortgages.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's largely
because he's had a Senate that would stop the crazy. Well, now the Senate won't stop the crazy. Now it's coming to his desk, and the rubber is on the road.
Yeah, well, that's a scary part, because if you remember back some time ago, there was all this talk about a grand bargain.
And chain CPI. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I'm worried that he might just so he doesn't have to, take the hit on everything, he may bring that old sawhorse back and if you guys would beat me up, I'll let you do this and that and something else, and then next thing you know, oops, it changed everything.
That, like I said, this is where I get nervous, because I don't know if presented with, because he wanted a grand bargain, damn it. And he wants entitlement reform. He said so. I go back to being on the lib boat cruise a few years back, when there was a session in one of the auditoriums there, and Alan Grayson told us about the time that he got to ask Barack Obama, the sort of beauty pageant question, if you could do anything you wanted to, what would it be? and his answer was entitlement reform.
Yeah, it's real easy for somebody who's now got a guaranteed income for the rest of his life. You know, he may not have been rich when he got there, but he's going to be damn sure rich when he leaves. You know, it's easy to say entitlement when it doesn't bother you.
Right.
You know, it's just something about the entire class of people that when they get in there, they could have been just the most decent folk in the world, but then, you know, they start rubbing elbows with those rich people and before long they start...
Yeah, it's called the I've Got Mine Jack Syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little fellow that comes on a podcast called David Walsh, who calls it gimmitarianism, where it's, you know, it's all they want to do is do things to give you what they want, but once they get it, well, anybody else needs it. Well, sorry, we can't afford that.
Well, yeah, and you know what? That's a bipartisan thing. Consider the newly elected governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. The guy's in a wheelchair, okay? And this is not about disabilities. For instance, Greg Abbott hates trial lawyers, okay? He wants tort reform. Well, the reason he's in a wheelchair is because a tree fell on him once and he sued over it and, you know, got a tidy little sum of money. And having done so, is trying to close the courthouse doors for everyone else. Now, this guy is, you know, anybody who's ever been in a wheelchair can tell you how difficult it is to get around in one. There are still plenty of obstacles, but Charlie Pierce noted today that thanks to Tom Harkin's Americans with Disabilities Act, some of that has been ameliorated. Well, on the other hand, Mr. Pierce pointed out that Greg Abbott is running around hollering that it's government Kenyan usurper tyranny for the ADA to be applied in certain circumstances in Texas.
Well, Texas has always dreamed of being its own state. You know, like I said, I ride around a truck a lot, and I go to truck stops, and that's god awful. Anytime I get around Texas, you know, if they could get away with it, they want to be their own country. So, you know, Washington is like Darth Vader's backyard, according to them. And you know, it just bugs me. You know, one of your earlier callers there talked about a rash of stupidity. It's, you know, I sometimes think it's just the last dying gasp of the old white establishment just doing its last gasp to drag us down into the pit before they die off. And, ugh. But, appreciate your show. And, you can go ahead and count $20. I'll send to you on the mail so you can rack that up on your count tonight.
Oh, thank you very kindly. So we're down to 100.
So, I'll get your address from one of your websites.
Well, you might have a hard time finding it. Shoot me an email and I'll send it back to you. BobKincaid@gmail.com.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll let you go and pontificate some more.
All right, we'll just go to the next phone call. Have a good evening. Thanks for your thoughts.
No trouble. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's keep it rolling over to the Gizmo line. The Skype line, 304-574-8178, is now free. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yeah, Bill, what's up?
What's up? And my temper and my temperature is sky high and...
Blood pressure okay?
I guess. Pardon?
Blood pressure okay?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it usually is anyway, but I can't hardly believe it. But Bob, reverting again, you know what happened in the congressional elections in 1946? I think it was. It was at 7. The Republicans won, and that's when we got this wonderful Taft Hartley law, by the way. That came out of those guys.
Yeah.
And,
well, Taft-Hartley was the right-wing response to a little bit of worker freedom busting out all over the place.
Yeah, labor unions, after all. You know, the damn communists, they make a slave out of it. Well, what the hell do these people want to do? And I'm disgusted with this. My younger friends, all they ever do is look at a damn cell phone to see if somebody called them. It's like, get a freaking life. And a buddy of mine who was a retired history teacher, he told me that they were just kept cutting back and cutting back on his time to teach things because people don't really want to know the truth. They want to live in this little dream world of theirs, and I don't know. It's just I can't believe it that we put back this. Well, of course, the guy running against the governor here was a guy gets caught in a car with some other woman other than his wife. That looks real good, doesn't it?
Well, and you know what? Now let's understand something. If the guy who gets caught in a car with a woman other than his wife is a Republican, it's okay as long as he tells the rubes that he's asked Jesus for forgiveness, and Jesus has said, done. On the other hand, if a Democrat gets caught in a car with a woman other than his wife, and that Democrat crawls on his knees Henry II-like and is then flogged by a priest with a wet leather lash, it ain't enough.
Well, I got to watch that one, Bob. If I got caught doing that, I wouldn't be here talking today. It could be a fatal thing in some relationships, you know. The lady is quick to anger and quick to shoot. You're in trouble, you know. Because I sure as hell took advantage of my position as a musician and ruined a lot of things. It was occupational hazard. But I remember when Truman just called him the do-nothing Congress in the 40s, and I thought my generation thought we had buried these people once in 1964 when Goldwater and the right-wing Republicans took a beating. Of course, they were beaten by a guy from Texas who was a little on the slippery side himself, wasn't he? But I just don't know where we're going to go from here. Why would they go after the insurance bill? They may find they're not going to get anywhere with that one because the insurance companies seem to like it here.
They may vote to repeal Obamacare 6 times before lunch, but that one Barack Obama will veto. And so that's what they'll maybe do that on a standalone basis just to keep the rubes happy. Because remember, the next 2 years are about keeping the rubes happy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if they really get serious about it, they'll start tacking it onto things like, you know, a farm bill or a bill to save starving children. And they'll make Barack Obama choose between being billed as a children's starver or letting his signature piece of legislation go by the wayside.
And how long, Bob, have we had food stamps in this country? How many years now?
Oh, golly. I mean, you know better than I. You're older than me. How long ago did you get your first piece of government cheese?
I never did. I never had any problems until my eyesight went and I hit the six... my years when I couldn't drive, and without my freedom to drive, I couldn't run my own business. And when I couldn't run my own business, I had to put up with the way somebody else ran theirs. And to me, I laughed at it because I never worked a job yet without a contract. I'd send these guys contracts for a band job. And, well, what's this? Don't you trust me? No, I don't. You know, jeez. So I'm at a point of discouragement now. It's I'm so goddamn old it doesn't make any difference anyway, but...
I may sound a little bit crazy, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of symbolic stupidity that goes on in the next 2 years, Bill, but there's not going to be a lot of anything of substance.
Well, because they can turn around and nominate Mrs. Clinton the next time around, and she'll keep everybody happy just like her old man did.
Well, right, and remember, they have to sort of provide cover for whomever it is that's going to be their Republican nominee for the presidency.
Oh, they put up that idiot from Texas. When's that next spaceship going to take off? I'll give that a shot, you know.
Oh, I know.
It's just discouraging as hell to think that. We thought we were so goddamn smart in the 60s, and we were way ahead of the curve. And I backed away from politics when I was busy working and fishing and enjoying my life and working on cars and all the things that kept me busy. I mean, I still ride like a trooper, but geese, you know. It just, I don't know where to go. I can't wait to hear what Fresh is going to have to say next week. I hope you'll be back on next week anyway.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, because he can light you up a little bit and you can get away from some of the stuff, but Sullivan is a very discouraging word, and I'm a cynic. I'm the kind of guy that eventually just shrugs his soldier's shoulders and says, what the hell are you going to do? They're not going to jump off a building for these people. The hell with them. I'll figure out a way to survive, you know. But I just worry, and I'm so sick. Sometimes I wonder if that's why the Republicans weren't happy to see the man with a different melatonin level get elected, because then he can take all the morons and squeeze their heads. And the more morons, how do you squeeze their head? Because it's all coming off of Fox is just to the point of unbearably ridiculous, and yet these people buy it, Bob. What do you think the problem is? They don't teach history the way it really happened? Is that what the story is?
Well, sure, that's part of it. But last night is not nearly as complex as some people want to make it, Bill, because the fact of the matter is, and our chat room moderator, Lottie, just sent me this story a couple of minutes ago, and I'd read about it earlier today. Progressive ballot measures, things like increasing state-level minimum wages, passed with tremendous popularity in states where Democrats were stomped. Okay? That's not a...
I voted for President Obama twice, and I'd do it again next week if it had to be.
But wait, Bill. Those policies, those ballot initiatives like the minimum wage and stuff, passed in Arkansas, the minimum wage increase passed by 2-1 because people had a chance to go to the ballot box and vote for their own well-being. On the other hand, you had David Pryor, the Democrat incumbent, and you had Tom Cotton, the teabag and first-term congressman lunatic, running against each other, and David Pryor got a little bit more right-wing with every passing day. So, you know, the country wants progressive policies.
Yep.
But we didn't have any Democrats willing to run as progressives.
The way I look at some of this media, you begin to, Hitler, the right-hand man, isn't running it the way he did over in Germany, you know? The man with all the kids. What's wrong with my memory? What the hell was his name, Hitler's Minister of Propaganda?
Oh, Goebbels?
Yeah, that's the guy, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because, those people who were there were convinced by crazies to get crazier. And that's what bothers me here is that, the more I hear people complaining about the cost of their colleges, I can agree with them. I don't blame them one bit for that. But what are you doing about it? You doing anything about it besides handing these guys money and grimacing? But handing them money anyway, before your time, a guy was sending me papers from California that the reaction by the California college students against Ronald Reagan was fierce. But yet he gets elected to president. I always wondered how dumb the Republicans thought they were after they put the two-term limit on, because they thought they would have run Reagan again. As long as they just stand him in a corner, they'll keep voting for the guy. But I know the future doesn't belong to me anymore. It did, but it doesn't anymore. But it's just outright disgusting, Bob. When you start getting my age and you start saying, let's see, the door is over there, okay, I'll be using when I need to, you know?
Yeah. I have to issue a little bit of a correction or maybe a mea culpa or something. In as much as I said that if a Republican does it, he gets away with it. I just got a tweet from Isaac, who let me know that Representative Vance McAllister, the repig licking from Louisiana, who got caught smooching away on somebody who wasn't his wife, he lost last night.
At least they stand by their own BS once in a while. Because if that were the case, as you said, I would have been, Well, I used to call it, did you read Spartacus to see the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know how that opens up, right?
Oh, God, it's been a long
time. Well, the Roman was lying with crucifixions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Marcus Licinius Crassus's work.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I mean, what's going to happen to these? Because I live in a building full of old folks, and most of them don't have a concept of anything about this country or about this Constitution.
Did they vote yesterday or at all?
Oh, they voted here, same way I did. Go downstairs and vote.
Then there's the answer to your question. My guess is, and I'm echoing something that was said earlier, the Republicans will not, you know, they're not going to go out and play that privatized Social Security game or do something to Medicare unless they're making sure what they'll say to the generation that is getting their Social Security, to the generation that is getting their Medicare, they're going to say, we're not going to touch yours. Yours is safe because we love you. And God bless America. You're the greatest generation. We're gonna screw the 50-year-olds. Is that okay with you? And a whole bunch of elderly America will go, that's fine. Fuck 'em.
Yep, I got mine. Screw you. That's the whole attitude that has been so prevalent in this country for so long that it's, the only thing that makes me laugh about it is I have a terribly cynical sense of humor. So, you know, I cried when. I just saw my mother-in-law driving my new car off a cliff, and I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, the old Henny Youngman joke, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel sometimes, because these people are, Bob, they don't know a damn thing about the Great Depression. They don't. I don't think they teach them jack about it in school, about how, literally how tough it was. And all the reading that we had to do, they don't do anymore, you know? They don't read the Jungle anymore. Because you read it. What was it, Teddy Roosevelt, who was far from a left-wing pacifist, he was a strong president in many ways, though. But he said after he read the Jungle, he couldn't eat a piece of sausage anymore. So, and they don't have kids reading that stuff anymore.
No.
I don't know what the hell I read in school anymore. Tell you the truth, I don't, since I didn't raise any. Anyway, I'll make room for somebody else, but that's me and Jim, and neither one of us are kids, and neither one of us are real happy with what happened, that's for sure. You take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you, Bill. You have a good evening. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
All right. You will. Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. So, okay, now both lines are open, 304-574-8178, or the Gizmo line, which, hey, it just rang in. Let's go to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
We know, Jim.
Not much. First off, did you get the check?
I don't go to the mailbox.
Okay.
So
over a week ago, check with the boss man.
Okay. Then I think it's probably a safe assumption that that boss man
might have put the wrong PDS number, but I think it's still got everything else is correct. But anyway.
Yeah, they're pretty good about that, and I just haven't bothered boss man Wayne because he's been up to his eyeballs working the campaign for the last couple of weeks.
I understand. It's just this election. It's just...
Well, hey, you're not done, man. You're down in Louisiana, Stan. You get to watch the circus for, up into December, right?
Yeah, we got the runoff between Republican like Mary Landrieu and this guy Cassidy, I think his name is. And from what I understand, Cassidy's a total nutcase. But...
And therefore the smart money is on him, right? I already heard the soundbite earlier today from Mary Landrieu saying, this election is not that about that one in our White House now. Okay,
yeah,
she said this election is not who was president, who is president, or who will be president. This election is about me. No, she didn't say it's about me. But clearly, having watched this whole thing unfold, has learned precisely nothing.
Well, I mean,
because you know what? I'm sorry. I'm not trying to overrun you, and I'll hush in a second.
All right.
And I just don't understand this. Why not go out on the stump and say, hey, I mean, come on, Jim, how many uninsured Louisianans are there? How many Louisianans are there that if grassroots groups would help get them out, get out the vote, would get out there and put her over the top if she would just say, listen, I'm going to keep the pressure on to make the Medicaid expansion happen for you, and if you go out and you whip that crazy bastard's ass and put me back in the Senate, then Bobby Jindal will hear your voice loud and clear.
That's the thing is, the people down here are pretty goddamn stupid. I'm sorry. As far as I'm concerned politically, I mean, like you pointed out a while back about, you know, we had UEP Long, and it's actually kind of progressive. You won't have anybody near him. You can't even begin to be progressive or the L word. You know,
yeah, but Jim, I was thinking about that earlier today. I don't know how right that is. The president of the United States, popular or un, has a tremendous degree of power. And there are a lot of people for whom that might matter. But what really doesn't impress people is when politicians, and you know, we've certainly witnessed it last night, when politicians run away from their own, when they show that they have the loyalty of a hyena. And we had a lot of Democratic hyenas last night, Jim.
Yeah. It's also like Obama, when he got elected. I remember I almost had a chill when we finally got a Democrat. Maybe it'll be kind of liberal. I'm not delusional. I know he's not going to be anywhere what I want. But in his first 2 years, he didn't really seem to do anything. And he had the House and the Senate, and I know about what the 63 days. He really didn't have that much time, but he did get a lot of things done. But then he just kind of didn't seem to be proactive enough to try and get things through, because you only got that first 2 years, and you got the reelection, then from what history, from what I understand, you know, there's a, you know, kind of like tides, they come in, they go out, it kind of comes back. There's kind of a whiplash. You know, I mean, from what I think you told me, that even when FDR got in 32, by 30, you know, he got his stuff done pretty quick, but by 34, it was kind of a whiplash against him.
By 37, yeah. He was on his way to getting us out of the Depression by 37, and then he started listening to the money people who said, "Ooh, the deficit." And the next thing you know, he started dealing with the deficit, and we had some belt tightening and some austerity, and we went right back into the Depression again.
Right. Yeah. And then trying to talk history, people are just ignorant of history. I mean, it's, when they think about your show, and I mean, it's like with the 46th election, because that's, I asked Malloy about like that. He wasn't really aware of it, but I mean, I heard you mention, I've heard other people, I think Hartman, like in 46, that's when the Republicans took back the House and the Senate. Am I correct?
When again? Sir?
I know they got back, because that's when they stopped. They made the right to work crap. That's when that legislation came through. I started, if I'm not mistaken. And that was with the 46 was the year, because they seem to have that little sliver. And the weird thing about that is, a little bit I know about, what I know about Europe, I mean, Roosevelt, Churchill gets them through World War II. And then he voted out in 46, I think. I mean, are you aware of that, or do you know that?
I'm a little lost, I'm afraid.
But it's also that the argument that it's like Roosevelt guided us through World War II, the Great Depression, and the Democrats basically. I know he had to have a Democratic Congress and Senate for the most part, at least through that, and then boom, in 46, the thanks is okay. Well, it's kind of Republicans. It's and it's like anybody who is not making $1 million a year, or at least high six figures, is voting Republican, is beyond me.
Well, what was it that the dim leader said? If you're not making more than $1 million a year, you're not rich. Or no, if you're not,
probably.
it was something crazy like that. Yeah. But understand. I go back to my original thesis, Jim. This is empire behavior.
Right.
At some point we've got to give up this goofy, self-deluding notion that there is any popular representation going on. If one, for instance, becomes a diehard devoted listener to Dr. Bill, you find out that back at the point in time when the Federalist Papers were being put out, people like Madison and Hamilton were saying, and I think this was Madison who said it, that, listen, democracy is whatever we define it to be. And so if you get to vote for the guy who votes for the guy who votes for the guy who votes for the president, it's democracy. And it's been all downhill since then. And it went completely into the sinkhole with Citizens United.
Yeah.
And it's not, right. and barring some sort of substantial action, it's not coming out. The democracy, any notion of democracy, which has always been aspirational and not operational in this country, it's even dead as an aspiration. Those of us who want to work to make things better have to understand, because otherwise it's just going to be a series of miserable defeats, that we are working within oligarchy. We are working within corporatocracy. I guess there's plenty of democracy if you're a corporation. Hell, the Supreme Court will let you deny women birth control if your corporation, for sake, has closely held religious beliefs. I mean, just take a second, Jim, and ponder how absolutely ludicrous that is. That's nuts. That is not cogent thinking. Corporations can't have closely held religious beliefs. They aren't real. They are something that, I mean, if you like in the first couple of days of law school, they teach you about these things called legal fictions. Corporations are legal fictions. And that makes about as much sense as Joni Ernst saying that there only being one person with Ebola in the United States is a matter of opinion. Nothing's real anymore. America decided to go down the rabbit hole and sit down at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party last night.
No, I was like really blown away. I mean, even like you all losing, that kind of shocked me out in Colorado. It's just, I mean, I hope you're right. I hope I can see 2016, more people will turn out, but also like you were talking about, like the 18, 19-year-olds who didn't vote, a large percentage, would you say 12% voted or something ridiculous?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous number. But I'm not, look, I'm not going to beat them up, okay? Because
yeah, I got you.
I try really hard not to be a, cranky old coot who stands in the yard and tells and screams at clouds and tells people to get off their lawn. Because see, even though I'm approaching, I think I'm probably already in my geezerhood at 51. When I go to shave and I look at myself in the mirror, there's still an 18-year-old behind the reflection. You dig?
Oh, totally. I'm kind of the same way, and I got three years on you.
And I acknowledge that I'm a weirdo Okay, I've always been politically plugged in. I've been paying attention because I had parents who were plugged in, who had parents who were plugged in. I mean, I went up and checked on my grandfather's grave today just to see if there was any signs that he'd gotten up after last night.
If I could have
stuck a red wire and a black wire into the ground, I could have powered this house because I know my deeply democratic West Virginia ancestors are spinning faster than a goddamn turbine in a dam. I mean, that's what's so painful about this. Not, you know, like I said, it was not an IQ test because there were no right answers on the ballot, no correct answers on the ballot, but The fact that essentially thousands of West Virginians, but not many of them, because the stay-at-home factor was, oh my God, here, went to the polls and repudiated the blood and the sweat and the tears and the toil, the fear and the agony and the misery and ultimately the triumphs of our ancestors who waged a long and bitter struggle for even the barest degree of recognition of their essential human dignity. And all of that shit just got flushed right down the goddamn toilet last night. I'm yelling again. I'm sorry.
I don't blame you, dude. I'm the same way. It's just like when you were talking, you mentioned earlier about this attitude. Now, I just got approved for disability Social Security, okay?
Congratulations.
Like, these people, yeah, you know, these two brain surgeries and da-da-da, a whole bunch of all the other fun things I've been through, okay, qualify. But I wonder if they're going to start chipping away at that. Now, you said if you got, you were mentioned earlier about the people who are getting Social Security now. Okay, well, I got mine. But the attitude of, well, screw the next generation, you know, the 50-something, I'm like, you know, I wonder if they're going to start trying to cut back on it, you know.
Somewhere along the way we will have some of those bullshit phony baloney hearings led by the Republicans in the House and the Senate about all the people who don't deserve it, who are getting crazy checks or drunk checks from SSI. Oh, God, they love to. Republicans love nothing better on earth than beating up people who are disabled and on SSI. And let's take a minute here and just delineate something for people who may not know. There are essentially two forms of disability in this country under Social Security. There is Social Security Title II disability, which is disability that is largely work-based. You cannot get it unless you have a certain number of quarters of work in the last 5 years that you can no longer do, okay? And how they determine whether you can no longer do it is a matter of, it's kind of Byzantine, it's kind of arcane, but it attempts to be some degree of income replacement. Then there is SSI, Supplemental Security Income, which ain't even really Social Security at all. And Supplemental Security Income is what is commonly referred to by your various heartless, soulless, motherless, conscienceless, sociopathic repiglicans as the drunk check or the crazy check. Now, this is for people who have gotten themselves beaten up in the course of living in the American American dream of freedom and democracy, and can no longer earn a wage, just the same as regular disability is. But SSI is not tied to what you made in your previous working life. You may never have been able to work. And it covers a wide range of problems, including but not limited to birth anomalies. Okay? But the Republicans call it the drunk check or the crazy check because they like to create the impression among people who are low information in the first place and operate mostly on the powers of their lizard brains that there are undeserving people out there who are getting every goddamn bit of $700 a month. Can you imagine that, Jim? $700 a month, with which you know, they pay rent, buy groceries, keep the lights on, and then they either drink it up or they sit around buying little porcelain clown figurines with all the money that's left over because they're crazy. And, yeah, they'll come after that. And they like to think that people who have Title II disability, if they find out that somebody with Title II disability managed to put their pants on in the morning without hurting themselves, well, then there'll be a goddamn Senate hearing talking about fraud in the Social Security disability system. So, sure, Jim, they'll come after it. And the question is, do we have a president with enough goddamn guts to stop them when they do? Because here's the, if there's any good news out of this, they do not have a veto-proof majority.
Yeah, that's about the only thing, you know. I mean, but I just noticed the people within my family. I'd say me and my youngest brother are about the only two who voted are basically Democratic, and everybody else is like Republican. You know, even my 79-year-old mother, and she doesn't realize, like you said, she's probably in that group, that they won't touch her Social Security, but they're coming for the next generation, and if something happens to one of her grandchildren, in fact, one of her grandchildren has, you know, there's four parts to the heart, she's only got three, so she's got born with an effed up heart, and she has medical issues, and I don't think Jesus is coming to Earth to fix it anytime soon. That's what Jesus gave her, you know. But
yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have given it to her if he didn't want her to have it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sorry, I regret even saying that because, you know, it's no fun dealing with any of that, and it's scary, and it's horrible to go through life worried half to death.
No, I know, but I mean, it's just like the two brain aneurysms I had. I guess Jesus wanted to do it, so it happened. You know, I mean,
mysterious. Hey, yeah, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, isn't it? So I get to say, mysterious and wonderful are the workings of the Lord, Brother Jim. He give you them two aneurysms for a reason, to show you how much he loved you.
I know, man. And then that's just like with the thing about, well, yeah, you got free will.
But remember, God is love, Jim.
And he knows exactly when you're born, and he knows exactly when he's going to kill you. Because basically, if he knows everything, he knows when you're going to die. And not to be proven wrong, he's going to kill you whatever day. Out for you your last day.
Exactly. Hey, Jim, it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm going to try to take this next call coming in. Thank
you
so much.
Get somebody else on. Check
all
you
right.
later.
Bye now. Well, ditch the call. Try again, whomever you were. I was just ready to come to your call. 304-663-4676. Note coming in from our buddy Jay Cruzen a little bit ago. Al Franken ran as a progressive and sailed to victory. I don't think he exactly sailed. There was a recount that went on for months, Jay Cruzen, but I get your point. Most of these fools that lost are dinos, Democrats in name only, that rode Obama's coattails in on his first term. There you go. Yeah, okay, thank you, Texas Betsy. God doesn't close a ventricle without opening it. Oh, stop. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening?
Not much. I heard...
Hey, you've got a new state senator, don't you, Kevin?
Yeah, Cory Gardner.
No, that's a U.S. senator.
Oh, state senator.
Or is he a member of the assembly?
Chappie! Did he win?
You betcha.
I didn't hear that he'd won.
You betcha. Chappie Klingenschmitt's in the Colorado State Legislature.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, well.
And he wants to, and remember, he wants to spank transgendered children.
Yep. Well, Hey, at least I wanted to fill you and Jim both in on the story with Mark Udall, because that shouldn't be that surprising. You remember a couple years ago you commented to me about what happened when you knocked on Mr. Udall's door when you were out there in Washington. And I also called his office and never got a reply back.
Right.
Well, Mr. Udall, about 2 weeks ago, I got a phone call from a progressive group, truly progressive group, asking me to make phone calls for various candidates. And they were asking me to make calls for out-of-state candidates. And I said, well, why aren't you making phone calls? Why aren't you asking me to make phone calls for Udall? And they said, well, because Mr. Udall didn't want our help. And I'm like, oh, well, that's clearly really interesting. I was not surprised at all he lost, Bob. I was not shocked at all. I was fairly sickened by the fact of who beating, but it did not shock me. Mr. Udall was one of those that ran just like Alison Lundgren Grimes did, as far as they could away from the president.
But on the other hand, it looks like, I know it's tight, Kevin, but John Hickenlooper has declared victory, has he not?
Yep. And thank God for that, because Bob Burk-Praise is on the level of Joni Ernst or Chappie. I mean, that would be just as bad as having Chappie as a state senator. We can keep him under check. As a governor, God, you could only imagine, and you don't want to. And same thing with Bob Burk-Praise. So I was really quite feeling trepidation over the fact of, would Hickenlooper pull this out? Because I'm not a fan of Hickenlooper. He is not a progressive, but he is not Bob Beaupré's.
Somewhere in the middle.
You know, and I know if Beaupré's got in as governor, that would be the end of any type of assistance that I'm getting in this state, because he just killed all, you know. And I've gone through the same emotions everybody else has over the last 24 hours, but I'm seriously thinking of just pulling out of the Dem Party. I see no other choice as long as people like Wasserman Schultz run the Democratic Party. As long as we've got people like that, because their ads for their candidates were horrible, and they don't want us in their party. It's as you've said many times over the last 2 days, Republican and Republican alike. And I'm not a fan of white anything, light beer, light Republicans.
Oh, and ain't that the truth?
You know, so I just wanted to call in and kind of mention that when Jim said that, because to the outside people looking in, it may be a shock that you'd all lost, but to those of us here in the state of Colorado, it was no shock. He ran an absolutely awful campaign. He couldn't get out of his own way, and the other thing these people did across the country, these Democrats, instead of speaking to the issues, it seemed like they were always trying to answer whatever the Republican made up of charges against them. And so it seemed like they were always on the defensive.
Well, it just seems like our side doesn't know how to fight back, which again calls into question the professional loser class that is our political consultancy. I mean, honest to God, there are very, very few people out there who can be wrong nearly all the time and still keep a job. I mean, even the weatherman on TV has to make get it right maybe 40% of the time.
Yeah. Yep. I know in various conferences I've been to and listened in on of truly progressive consultants, they're flabbergasted by some of the tactics that have been used by Democrats in this election cycle. The things that the truly progressive consultants are telling their candidates not to do, it seems like these dinos are going out of the way to do them. And that's what's really upsetting. And so I know last night listening to Beloy, I think you were going to be listening to him after the show, and you mentioned it last night, and I know he
wrapped up absolutely smoking hot on fire.
Oh yeah, but it struck me when he said he didn't vote it, when he didn't vote, because I can't say I'm to that point yet, but I'm almost there. I'm right on that edge of. Yeah.
I don't think, I can never say what the future will hold, Kevin. I'm not there. And I'm not going to trot out the old, you know, because people fought and bled and died argument. It's made by enough people. I don't have to make it. I'll give it my own, turn. And it's this, and I've said it before. In 1948, Strom Thurmond, who was absolutely hell-bent on not supporting Harry Truman or the Democratic Party because of the winds that were blowing in the way of a move toward toward even the most mild forms of non-discrimination based on race. Remember, Strom had raped his family's maid when he was a younger man and fathered a child by her.
Yep.
Strom declared that there ain't a dime's bit of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And he formed his independent presidential campaign.
Yep.
20 years later, George C. Wallace, racist, bigot, picked up that torch and declared once again in his independent run for president, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yep.
In 2000, Ralph Nader picked up George Wallace and Strom Thurmond's torch and said, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I say all that because among all the tactics that have worked, I mean, and we've talked about so many of them, making sure that you have to go to the police station to get a voting ID instead of the elections commission, which if you've got parking tickets will keep you from getting that.
Yep.
Just out of an abundance of caution. Even if the police don't check your record, are you going to run that risk?
Exactly.
No. You'll just not vote. It ain't worth the hassle. So there's that. And then there are the phone calls telling Democrats to vote on Wednesday. Republicans vote on Tuesday. Democrats vote on Wednesday. Happens all the time. There are the flyers labeled election violation notice that were mailed out in Kentucky. Those are mailed out every election by the Republicans, and they never get penalized or busted for it because it's a bell you can't, well, you can't unring a bell.
Yep.
But of all of those, Kevin, the one that has worked the best against Democrats and progressives is there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I heard it today. I read two things today that just made me run around the room tearing at my clothing and kicking furniture. That was one of them. The other one was, the Democrats failed because we haven't worked hard enough to compromise with the other side. I kid you not. And when I read that, I thought immediately of, because everything is a movie reference to me, right?
Yeah.
I thought immediately of this.
I gave my love a cherry that had no stone. I gave my love a chicken that had no bones. I gave my love a story that had no end. I give...
Yeah, I'm all fresh out of any patience or tolerance whatsoever for the kumbaya wing of the Democratic Party, Kevin.
Yep. That's the only thing that keeps me from not voting, because, I can't buy the line that there's not a dime's bit of difference between a Republican and a Democrat. But that line's getting kind of bordered, I'll say that.
Well, and I'm not critical. Look, voting is a right. So is not voting. If freedom of religion is a right, freedom from religion is also a right. Voting is a right, not voting is a right. That's why we could never have mandatory voting in the United States the way they do in Australia, no matter how... Well, no offense, Robert, or anybody else in Australia. Mandatory voting got you Tony Abbott. You get my meaning. But I will not be driven out of an election on an abject falsehood that was originally put in play by fucking racists.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, my trip to the poll yesterday was an act of absolute, utter, unmitigated, complete, total futility.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody, not one single human being on that ballot who represented my interests. Okay, there was one. And he got waxed like a basketball court because he was a member of the Mountain Party.
And that's where I had the hardest time saying I really want out of this Democratic Party, but to go to a third party is an exercise in futility. Ultimately, it's up to us, if you are defined as us being progressive, liberal, it's up to us to stand up for our progressive and liberal ideals and not shut up within the parameters of the party.
Well, yeah, and that's the other part of this this puzzle. Once again, primaries matter. Okay, if you want progressive candidates, don't sit around waiting to hold your nose in November. One, get off your seat. Two, get into the street and go out there and find find political progressives and then support them. Work your ass off for them. They need workers, not just, they don't just need money, they need volunteers.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying something I haven't done. I have walked that walk as I talk that talk.
Yep.
I busted my ass for Dennis Kucinich as a campaign volunteer in 2004. Now, I haven't found anybody that inspired me to do anything for them since, but if one comes along, I will. Now, to be fair, I'm not going to do that for any Mountain Party candidates in West Virginia. Just not, because I'm not going to participate in an act of futility. I did what I could to help independent candidate Ed Rabel. You heard Ed.
Oh, yeah.
Ed would have been awesome in the Congress. And you know what? Here's something interesting. Ed Rabel ran a race against two multi-million dollar funded mainstream party campaigns in a single congressional district. He got 4% of the vote.
Yep.
With no budget. As an independent, this is important, as an independent. On the other hand, after promising that they would not run a candidate in the senatorial election, the Mountain Party went ahead and put Bob Henry Baber, who's a great guy, nice guy, smart mind, sharp as a tack, love him to death. After saying they wouldn't run anybody, they put him up as a candidate in the general election for the Senate race. He ran a statewide race. Ed Rabel, running in a single congressional district, outpolled him 4-1. The independent outpolled the Mountain Party. And, of course, the Mountain Party is the one that is intimately, well, you know, officially affiliated with the Green Party. The Mountain Party candidate that I voted for House of Delegates yesterday, I think he wound up with something like maybe 700 total votes. I mean, got curb stomped. And every Mountain Party candidate in the state got curb stomped.
Well, that's because not just the Mountain Party, any third party candidate.
No. The Libertarian candidate for Senate got 7,000 votes.
Right. But what I was going to say is any third party has to realize they have to build from the bottom up. They can't run a national election. They have to start in city councils, county commissions. They have to start at the lower levels and build their party up. Because this is what you're saying.
Well, and to be fair, they were doing that. I mean, there were several Mountain Party candidates for House of Delegates, and that was great. Good on them. But there are dynamics at work here that mean that if they achieve their maximum success, they will become the second party because it's a two-party system. And it is never, barring a constitutional convention that completely reconfigures the nature of government, going to be a three-party system or multi-party system. I mean, I think it would be absolutely fascinating if some state would have a constitutional convention and ditch first past the post and ditch their legislature and their governor and say, screw it. We're going to have a parliament in this state.
Yep.
And completely abandon the constitutional form adopted in the Constitution of the United States. Because you don't have to have exactly the same kind of government as the federal government is.
No.
Be interesting. Let's find ourselves a state and have ourselves a parliament. And then you know what? The wild-eyed libertarians can have a few seats. And the Greens can have a few seats, and the anti-womb freaks can anti-women freaks can have a few seats, and then we'll have to do some coalition building, which is the one thing this country probably needs to learn more than anything else.
Yep. we haven't learned from history, so therefore we're doomed to repeat it, and I find myself sitting in total amazement that it's the year 2014, and we're even discussing this election as it happened, as it did. Because in my youth, I never imagined we would be at this place in our history. I never could imagine we'd be at the where we are today. We've gone backwards, and we apparently
in a Republican form of government, Kevin. It is unimaginable, but in an empire, it is not only imaginable; it is predictable.
Well, yeah, you just have to study history there too to look at the Romans
So you brought up the Romans. I'm glad you did. Because I was thinking, you know me, I find a little time every day to think about the classical antiquity, just to keep my nerd going, keep my hand in my nerd pot. Very few people know how the Romans voted. Well, fewer still probably even know that the Romans did vote. But they did. They voted for things like Tribune of the Plebs, and they voted for censors. And they voted for the various praetors and consuls, okay?
Yep.
When the Romans went to vote, they voted by tribes. Now, it sounds kind of antiquated because it is, but Rome, as rich and cosmopolitan as it had become by the first century before the Common Era, still had a tribal structure. And the tribes were done in such... But here's the fun part. As the citizenship was handed out more and more to people outside of Rome, you know, those people, you know, it doesn't always have to be about skin color. A lot of times it's economic. It's just more often about skin color in the United States because that is our particular, peculiar sickness. But as more and more people got the citizenship in ancient Rome, the power elite of ancient Rome, the patrician class, had to figure out some way to deal with them, because if all those people started voting, like with the plebs, which whom they had more in common with, if the plebs of one tribe voted with the plebs of another, and you can see where the trouble comes in, right?
Yep.
So they had to rig the game.
Yep.
And so all the tribes, the way it was structured, everybody voted in their tribes. And then whoever won in the tribes, that number is what was compared to find out who won what. So they came up with the brilliant idea of putting all the newbies in the same tribe with all the other poor people. Or not poor people, but all the other, you know, not our kind.
Right, yeah.
So you could have a shit ton of people vote and have these overwhelming numbers, and it would boil down to one vote. Yeah, okay, that tribe with all the hundreds of thousands of people in it gets the same vote as the tribe that's only got 30,000 in it. Isn't that brilliant? You ever wonder? And so the reason I was thinking about all that is because I have said time and time again, Kevin, that I don't see any real particular opportunity for a meaningful shift in the politics of this country until November 2022, because that will be the first election, and let's see, 6 and 4 is 20. That'll be the midterm election of after the presidential election of 2020.
Right.
It will also be the first election to be held after the 2020 census.
Yep.
And my thinking on that was, well, you know, there's going to be a pretty tidy demographic shift in 2020, because we just know the numbers are changing. This is rapidly becoming a non-white majority minority country, as it should be. But you know what? the lesson of the ancient Romans and their tribal politics shows us the way that it's going to be in 2022 or in 2032 or 2042. As long as the power structure can be maintained by people in deep possession of white privilege, then they can continue to pass laws that do things, as we saw yesterday, like disenfranchising 0.6 of 1 million human beings in Texas.
Yep.
Got it? Game's rigged. There's a break on the roulette wheel.
Yeah.
There's a magnet in the crap table.
Yep.
So, you know, all of this is worth pondering. This is not by way of saying give up. This is by way of saying if you want to win, you're playing in a rigged game. So that means we have to work 10 times, not 2 times, 10 times as hard.
And the Democratic Party, the progressives in the Democratic Party had better start pondering the answers to those questions starting today. Because in 2022, it will be...
Well, I disagree with you. I don't think the progressives have to ponder anything. The navel-gazing has to go on inside the old power structure of the moribund National Democratic Party.
Yep.
And it is moribund. Somebody has got to teach these fools, and the last person who tried to do it was Howard Dean.
Yep.
But it is possible to win with progressive ideas. By the way, a little clarification coming in from Robert in Australia. He says there's no compulsory voting in Australia. It's a technical point, but no. You just have to turn up at a polling station to have your name crossed off, after which you can write Felix Unger on the ballot papers if you want, or, you know, Francis Urquhart. F you. Okay, I got that. Well, then maybe there's a possibility here. You just have to show up. Although I think even that would be challenged, because, you know, freedom.
Well, I can't say much more than what I've said, Bob, so I'm going to have to check into the Chappie thing, because I would have thought it'd been talked about here today, and I haven't heard a word about it.
Oh, yeah, I'm not kidding.
Yep.
There it is, Colorado elects Obama exorcist who wants to spank transgender children, Scott Kaufman, raw story. El Paso County District.
Now that's my county. It's the district over from me. But thank God it's not my district. And
it's the Colorado House, not the Colorado Senate.
At least the... I sent you the story about Bernie Herpin getting defeated. That was one really bright spot that I had yesterday. Because he's the guns at all cost candidate, and after we lost 2 progressive candidates over the recall, voters decided they didn't like Bernie Herpin, which they've done. This man has been appointed to a county commission, a city council, and to a state senate, and every time after the appointment, he loses the next general election without fail, 3-for-3. And I kind of think that says something about Bernie Herpin. You know, I mean, I'm glad to see it. I like the man just on a talking to him. I don't have any problem with talking to him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't dislike him. But his political beliefs, I couldn't vote for the man for dog catcher and wouldn't. So I was extremely happy to see and the man that defeated him was once again a true progressive, which proves that if you run a true progressive, they will win if they'll stand up for progressive ideals. So, that's my one bright spot for the election. So on that note, I'll close. And
all right, we got to have one, Kevin. You take it easy.
Yep. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Texas Betsy noting by way of chat, that was one of the questions my students had yesterday, if voting was required. Three of them filled out their student council ballots with the words, I abstain. They also wondered at the idea of the secret ballot. Things we take for granted are not necessarily fully comprehensible in a purely logical, rational sense. Let's check in with Devin real quick. Hey, Devin, what's up?
It's been one of those 24 hours now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it kind of has. But I'm okay now. I really am. I'm okay. Because you and I live in a state where it's not like some wave of saving progressivism was on the horizon.
No, but the big thing that that I have to worry about now is the elimination of Medicaid and the pre-existing condition protection.
Well, they might go after the Medicaid, but they're not going to go after the pre-existing conditions because their own constituents like that. And frankly, my real prediction is, apart from a whole bunch of hearings and maybe impeachment, not a lot of anything is going to get done. Their whole point is to not do anything. Devin, they believe in that the government governs best that governs not least, but not at all.
Yeah.
And so,
well,
I mean they're going to put a lot of crazy shit out there. They are not going and their hang up remains, Devin. The overly melanin enhanced individual in their white, damn it, house. They are fixated on him. You remember maybe you don't. Back in the 90s, long before it was ever coined for the current administration, we had Clinton derangement syndrome. And it was loopy. Oh, my God, it was loopy. You had a congressman from Indiana declaring, really, no kidding, that he had proven that Hillary Clinton killed Vince Foster by shooting watermelons in his backyard.
Yes.
They, you had Jerry Falwell putting out the Clinton Chronicles, showing that the Clintons had killed more people than Michael Corleone. That was so patently false that even the Republican Party wound up having to run away from it.
I still hear the Vince Foster stuff.
Well, that's because it's still intensely popular.
And
the reason I bring that up, Devin, is because all that stuff happened because the Republican Party was driven absolutely crazy just by the bare mere existence of Bill Clinton. And particularly Hillary Clinton, okay? And they could have actually done a hell of a lot more damage than they did. But they didn't because they were deranged by their hatred. There is no reason to think that this Congress is going to be any different because we have now 6 years under our belts of full-on batshit crazy Obama derangement syndrome, which is made even worse by the inherent racism involved. Do please remember that Bill Clinton, once upon a time, was famously called our first black president.
Yes.
No kidding. Well, that's going to... That will, I think, obsess them. And they will have to do certain things to keep the paste eaters and paint chip snackers happy.
I had the misfortune of growing up in the 90s, so...
Okay. So all of that, I think, Devin, presages, and again, like I mentioned earlier, they've got to protect the ground they're on for whomever winds up coming out of the clown car as their nominee in 2016. And in addition to Obama derangement syndrome, they are all still suffering from Clinton derangement syndrome, and it gets a little bit worse every day that Hillary Clinton does not declare her intention to seek the presidency of the United States. It's like a proctoscopy that will not go away for them. And it's done with a cactus, you know? I mean, they are wiggling so they can't stand it. And so, consequently, Ted Cruz is going to run the science committee in the Senate. A freshman senator is going to get a science. Well, maybe he won't run it, but he'll be on it. Jim Inhofe, who is willing to sacrifice children to climate change, is going to run the environmental committee. You may actually. I mean, and I'm looking for silver linings here, I admit it. You may actually see a little bit more proactive progressivism out of the Senate this time through than you saw when they had power. Because there may be a few in there who are willing to just throw shit against the wall and see if it sticks, just to make the monkeys fling the poo.
Because the problem is though, if anything is waved under Obama's nose, he's going to jump right on it.
That's a little broad for my tastes. I don't think we can say
any
that.
Any wonderful grand bargains He is not going to,
if he hasn't already, he is not going to voluntarily give away the ACA. And again, as I said before, the insurance companies are not going to walk away from all the free money they're getting.
However, the insurance companies would be just fine with the getting rid of the individual mandate and Medicaid, or at least the expansion. You know, maybe that would be on the table if, something.
Well,
remember,
there are also legacy issues, okay? And Barack Obama, in the last 2 years of his presidency, is not going to let his legacy be that he caved in on poor people, on poor people's health care. It's not going to happen.
I hope you're right.
I think I am.
I really.
But again, with the caveat, Devin, do not for an instant think that this means that there's not going to be 2 years of absolute crazier than a sprayed roach Republican conduct. The bag. Jesus Christ! Did you see what Joni Ernst did in her victory speech? Like I said, this is going to be her in the Senate is going to be 6 great years for anybody who does progressive radio. She's a gift that keeps on giving. The woman made a reference, arguably. The woman made a goddamn deliverance reference in her victory speech.
We're going to make them squeal. Panties, too. Yeah, no, she didn't say panties, too. Yeah, squeal like a pig. Woo, squeal.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I guess the only thing we can do at this point is, you know, light a big-ass fire under Obama's ass.
I thought you were going to say light a big-ass blunt, and I was going to go, amen, brother.
Well, I needed light a fire under his ass. I mean, you know, we know it's brown, but you know it can get extra crispy if we really push him.
I mean, I don't think anybody's going to make him do anything. He's not that guy. You know, he quoted that FDR line about, I love what you're doing, I love what you're saying, I love your idea, now make me do it. And after he did that, you know, he paid lip service, so thank you, goodbye. I think every decision he makes is going to be motivated by him and him alone for the next 2 years. And
however, if you can, if there's a big pile of letters and emails there that, you know, they need wheelbarrows to bring them in.
You know, oh, no, I'm not telling anybody to give up on activism. No, hell no.
Stuff. When they try to pull something crazy, they can point to that big pile there, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody will see it because, you know, they won't cover that.
In the end, we don't. In the end, no matter how much prognostication gets done, Devin, we don't know. And all we can do here is try to hold our little community together, so that maybe we can reach some decisions about how we act, how we respond, what our conduct is. Because I don't think I don't think there's anybody in the Horn Family Commune congregation, Devin, who's sitting there saying, "Well, damn. What did I do that, you know, what did I individually do or not do?"
It wasn't anything I could do.
No.
I mean, it wasn't like it came down to one vote or anything.
I had one reasonably progressive candidate, and I tried to help.
It was 30 fucking points, you know.
Yes.
Not even in the same zip code.
But realistic. Okay, but this is a philosophy question, Deb. And I draw my inspiration from it from last Saturday in Morgantown. Would you rather lose by 30 points and know that you were out of it early enough that you could get out in the first quarter and beat the traffic away from the stadium, or would you rather play kneeling ball and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory in the final ticking seconds of the game? Really, I mean, I'm not trying to be an ass here. Would it have made a difference to you had Natalie Tennant narrowly lost to Shelley Moore Capito, or had Nick Casey narrowly lost to Looney Mooney? I mean, one, on the one hand, because a loss is a loss is a loss. And two, because, oh, damn, a pro-coal candidate narrowly lost to another pro-coal candidate in the Senate race. Ah, shitsy! A pro-coal candidate narrowly lost to a pro-coal candidate in a congressional race. Well, damn.
Well, but there again, even though there's the pro-coal, there's batshit crazy and then somewhat less than batshit crazy.
I'm not sitting here being cantankerous with you. I don't think that metric applies. Because we had an entire campaign season of Natalie Tennant standing on the stump and saying, "I'm going to go to Washington and tell Barack Obama just what I think of his black ass."
She put out a goddamn campaign ad where she turned the lights out in the White House.
Yes, I know.
Mick Casey is about as much of a Democrat as Joe Manchin is, which means not at all.
Of course, but, you know, what one has to remember is that, you know, what passes for a Democrat in West Virginia is a, you know, a teabagger anywhere else, and what passes for a Republican here makes Mussolini look like a communist and Hitler look like a hippie.
Do you really think so? Because I know he gets a lot of guff from the right wing, but Robert Byrd periodically did some pretty progressive stuff.
Yes.
We actually have, and I commend to anyone, go to my Facebook page and scroll down till you find a repost from Ed Rabel of something that was published in the Gazette from him. Read it. West Virginia has a proud progressive past. It's not as proudly progressive as, say, Wisconsin's past is.
But you said the key word.
Past. We are not, but
dead,
you know,
gone,
we're not
buried.
But you know what? It's not that far. It's not that far in the past. As exasperated as I have been by Nick Joe Rahal, I give credit where credit is due. That man took it upon himself in 2002 to go to Baghdad on his own to try to prevent our war against the people of Iraq that killed 1 million Iraqis. That was not a conservative, democratic thing to do.
Yeah.
And if you know, I've told people how I voted. Yesterday in the voting booth, I voted for Nick Rahal. And I did so in the name of the 1 million Iraqi innocents whose lives he tried to save. I tried to ignore for a moment the 4,000 excess deaths in West Virginia every year that he hasn't tried to save. But goddamn, trying to save 1 million human beings in a war that we didn't need to wage has got to count for something.
Well, yeah, I mean, in that case, you have something that, you know, positive, you know, to vote for, you know, I mean, didn't have anything positive to vote for with, you know, Tenet. But, you know, the way I looked at it was, you know, I do it for no other reason, just you know, it's my little finger to the Republicans because it's all I got.
Right.
And
no fight for me
and,
on that.
You know, I wasn't going to not vote because, you know, there are millions of people who would love to vote.
600,000 of them in Texas.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm not going to take the ball and go home. I mean, you know, even you know, I know it didn't mean anything. The only thing it meant was, you know, since I could go in there, I did. And you know, the only reason I could go in there is because there wasn't anything I could do that would do any harm.
Yeah, you took a Hippocratic Oath approach
that you
to it.
Could have any effect. Well, yeah, I mean, if there's
first,
any
do no harm.
You could have any effect, then they're going to keep your ass out of there by any means possible. And, you know, we've seen this in states all over. But it's just. And you know that great progressivism, you know, most of the people I've known of who were the great progressives, you know, they're, you know, over 80 years old. I mean, you know, I just, especially in this area. And, you know, they're to the point where they've got, you know, spongiform brain rot, and, you know, they won't be around much longer. I mean, you know, it's, and there's just nothing, there's nothing in between.
Right.
I mean, yeah, there are plenty of people who have, you know, progressive ideas, but they can't, you know, they can't, you know, attach that to politics in the real world. You know, they just go vote Republican. I mean, you know, look at my father. I mean, you know, he's just talking here tonight that, you know, nothing in the healthcare business should be for a profit.
There we go. Well,
That's communism right there, you know.
I just saw one awesome graphic. Faith posted it on my Facebook timeline. It comes from Ben Castleman, chief economics writer for 538, and it was put out there by NARAL Pro-Choice America. So voters want a higher minimum wage, legal pot, abortion access, and GOP representation. Okay, then. Because that's how that was the play out. That's the takeaway from last night. They want everything that the Republicans stand steadfastly, wholeheartedly against, and elected Republicans to make sure that they have it. Drink up.
Yeah. And it's an education problem, I really think.
People
aren't as stupid as you know, all the hoopla is making it out to be.
No, but it depends on how you define education. If you're talking about public education, sure, that we could do an entire week, we could do a month of programs on problems in public education, and basically Dr. Bill has. That's got to be a component of it. There's another educational element. Listen, the fourth estate gets to be the fourth estate because it serves a public educational function. And from Chuck Todd out there saying that Allison Lundergan Grimes had disqualified herself because she wouldn't admit that she voted for, you know, that one, to the Des Moines Register, which did everything in its power to keep from pointing out the fact, because I guess it's kitten kicking or something, to point out that Joni Ernst was crazier than a sprayed roach. The media failed.
Well,
and that is an educational failure, Devin.
Virtually every problem that we have in this world comes down to advertising. The very existence of advertising.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up because
tells you what to do.
You know, I didn't send, no matter how many desperate emails I got from, I didn't send $5 to Nick Rahal. I didn't send $5 to Nick Casey. I'm sad to say I didn't send $5 to Ed Rabel. I object to a commodified, commercialized, capitalized electoral system, and that much of it. Okay, I'll go vote, but I will, by God, not participate economically in that foul, filthy system.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not just talking about the, you know, political advertising. I'm just talking about advertising, period.
Sure, Mad Men. Yeah.
I mean, it's destroyed everything. I mean, you know, forgive. Money in politics, you know, it's just a band-aid, because what do you do with the money? You buy advertising.
There you go.
You know, even if you're buying people going door to door, that's still advertising.
Sure it is. I don't know, you know, how many print shops made their annual budget this year printing sleazy ads to be put in the postal system. How much money did the Postal Service make sending those sleazy ads around? Everybody gets co-opted, Devin.
Yeah, I never saw a single mailer from a Democrat this year. Not a single one.
Oh, I did. They were outnumbered probably by about 8-1, but I saw them.
There wasn't a single one landed in my mailbox.
Well, hey, I do have another caller online, so I want to make sure that we get to everybody who wants to talk this evening. I appreciate it, Devin. It's been a lovely conversation.
All right. Well, good luck with the calls.
Thanks. Take care. Bye now.
Night, Bob.
Devin calling from another portion of West Bicol, Virginia. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes.
Yeah, I apologize for calling in the second time, and I'll be very brief. I listened to your program on Friday night, and I listened to Sergey from Texas.
Yeah, Sergey.
And I want to let you know, or Sergey, that I certainly could understand his situation and feel his pain.
Well, I am sure that will mean a great deal to him because I know he's listening.
Well, I hope that he is, and I wish him all the best to being able to get out of Texas and wherever he is, and I just wish the man well.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's mighty kind of you.
No, it's just the truth. It's not kindness. It's just understanding, and it's...
Okay, maybe not kind. It is compassionate.
It's simple empathy, human empathy, and to feel like he feels. And I wish him the best. So I'll let you go for another caller.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Take care.
All right.
Bye now. We have these little moments of common cause and collegiality and compassion in this community, and that's one of the things that makes it different from a for-profit radio audience. Let's see here. Let's go back to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
What's happening?
It's Bill in Helena, Montana.
Yeah, Bill, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to get in here for just a bit and tell you a ballot measure that showed up on the ballot yesterday here in the great state of Montana. It confused me. It confused everybody I've talked to up here, and I'm gonna. I've got it right here. It's a constitutional amendment changing the name of the state auditor to the Commissioner of Securities and Insurance.
That doesn't sound like an auditor anymore, Bill.
That's not my thing. My thing is, why are we amending the Constitution by popular vote?
Is it permitted? I mean, Montana, you guys have referendum and recall, don't you?
I don't know.
I mean,
I
was just going to say that the further west you go, the more, because of the Western tradition, you have more popular participation in the governing process with things like referendum and recall.
This was submitted apparently by last year's legislature to be on the ballot. I know in 1972 the legislature got together and pitched the old constitution and wrote a whole new one. That was before I showed up out here, but I just thought that was the strangest thing I've ever come across.
Well, and it maybe it's tough for me to get my head around, Bill, because, you know, we amended our constitution yesterday, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, about as stupidly as one possibly could. We amended the Constitution of the state of West Virginia to allow the Boy Scouts to run a for-profit massive entertainment complex and not pay taxes.
I heard the show yesterday about that. That's
going to work out to a $5 million tax giveaway to the Boy Scouts.
Is that one of them hand jobs that the coal companies gave to the state, building that thing for them?
Hey, it's not just the coal companies. Does the name Bechtel mean anything to you?
Okay.
Summit Bechtel Reserve.
Close. Huh?
It's the Summit Bechtel Reserve is what it's called.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Hey, we're not such bad guys after all. Look, we're going to build you this real nice.
Oh, yeah. And Jim Justice, the coal baron who sold out West Virginia mountains to be blown up so the coal could be sent to Russia, he was good for, I think, $20, $25 million on the build. I mean, this thing cost over $200 million to build. It is freaking palatial. It looks like something Nero would have built.
Well, I can imagine. Those guys got the cash, man, and I mean, that's just spare change, actually, I would imagine. But as soon as you said yesterday it cost $200 million, I said, wait a minute. That's one of them don't look over here, look over here deals, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. You watch the birdie.
Guys, we'll build you this, so just leave us alone, would you?
Well, there's that, but there is also, and you know how I feel about so-called conspiracy theories, but this one kind of makes you wonder. There is a whole lot of secrecy that surrounded this place to the point that I would say most people in this area are now pretty convinced, since we already have one in the state, are now pretty convinced that there's some sort of secret underground bunker at Summit. Because during the construction phase, guys who were driving cement trucks would pull up to the site and then have to get out of the truck, and somebody in a uniform would then drive it the rest of the way in.
Kind of like the Greenbrier. Isn't that the one?
Yep. Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Ding,
yep.
Ding, ding. Oh, man.
But by the same token, and I had no idea, I haven't been on the property, you know, there's a stadium up there that holds tens of thousands of people, and you know they want to rent it out for concerts. Oh, there's all kinds of crazy shit associated with this, like when the Jamboree was held, and they only do that every 4 years. This place was intended to be a place that would host the Boy Scout Jamboree every 4 years. Well, when the last Jamboree was held, they took all the life jackets. They took all the stuff that they had used in the course of the Jamboree, and they took the tents that they used and threw them all away. Because when the next one comes around, they'll have all new for that.
Well, I don't know what to say, Bob.
Oh.
Hello? Hello?
Just a minute, Jeremy. I screwed up. Hold on.
Oh, sorry. No problem.
Dadgummit, I inadvertently cut Bill off. I'm so sorry, Bill. And I had to disconnect with Jeremy as well because, well, sometimes I don't drive the Skype so good. but at any rate, this has been a magnificent conversation, and I've hardly had a chance to extend thanks. Thank you very kindly to Cindy, our friend in the Great Northwest, for taking care of the remainder fundraising for this evening. So that is deeply appreciated. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Cindy. Bill, did I get you back?
Yes, you did. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, well, I happened. I'm a moron.
Oh.
I don't need to be running technology by myself.
Well, usually when something like that happens, I blame it on my magnetic personality. So.
Right. Well, in my case, it's a matter of, you know, I need a staff.
Well, I do too, Bob. That's not going to happen.
No, sadly.
I just want to let you know, by the way, that constitutional amendment was voted down.
Oh, really?
51.6% voted no. 48.4% voted yes. I'm just wondering if somebody's not trying to send up a little trial balloon just to see if, you know, we can get some totally BS thing through, and then the next go around try something really stupid. I don't know.
That's just weird. I don't know enough about Montana's amendment process. I mean, I take it from you that it is a rare thing to see a constitutional amendment on a ballot out there.
I have been here almost 20 years, Bob, and I don't think I've seen one. This first, and I talked to my brother today, who lives down around the Bozeman area, and he said, you know, I thought that was weird too. And he said, I read it 3 times. And I said, I read it more than that, trying to figure out what the heck this is. And that's all it was, just to change the name.
That's more than a little bit weird.
Well, just out of for information, we're talking about the people in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
The total number of registered voters, and I've got the Secretary of State's webpage up here on my computer, 674,262. So there was basically the total, darn near as many people in Texas disenfranchised than there are total registered voters in the state of Montana. Give some, you know, some idea.
Wow.
I mean, there's only a little over 1 million people now. I don't know what the most up-to-date population.
Well, y'all have a lot more land, but you are, you know, we don't even have double your population in West Virginia. We're somewhere between 500,000 and 3/4, probably closer to we're somewhere between 1.5 million and 1.75 million, probably closer to 1.5 million.
I don't think we're that much, but it was about 800,000 when I moved out here. There was more sheep than people in Montana when I moved out here, but that was fine with me.
And I know that the coal industry is coming hard for you. They've planned a 19,000-acre strip mine out there, if I read that correctly.
They just had a thing blow up in, well, not blow up. I mean, it metaphorically blew up a coal plant that had shut down in Great Falls or near Great Falls. I mean, there's so much land out here, and it's so big they can hide a coal plant easily.
Good God.
Without, I mean, it's amazing. But the total voter turnout, I thought you might be interested to know, was 54.62%. Which, for a midterm,
that's pretty respectable.
Pretty darn good. 368,280 folks voted, so that's about half, a little over half. So, on a totally different subject, I'll get off here. Maybe get somebody else on. I'd really like to hear Ferg's impressions of his trip. Any chance of getting a rope around the lad and having him sit in front of the microphone?
Actually, I think he would welcome that opportunity. I'll see about doing that.
Yeah, that's just
because he was mind blown. He was. Yeah, it is a long damn way from Western North Dakota to Northern California.
Yeah, well, I came out here in Montana when I was in college on a backpacking trip to Glacier National Park, and we came up across the Dakotas and into Montana, and I will never forget it, Bob. The roads in Montana could go forever. I mean, it's like Kansas.
They're just rifle shots, aren't they?
Pretty much, except somewhere around Miles City, Montana, which is in the eastern part of the state, there's a bend in the road, and there was an old cottonwood tree on that bend in the road, and somebody had tacked up a sign saying Eastern Montana National Forest.
An old, immovable cottonwood tree
that had probably been stricken by God knows how many drivers.
Well, I tell you, I came from Illinois, and the Mississippi and Indian culture in southern Illinois, a forked cottonwood tree was a sacred tree. I don't know if you were aware of that.
No, I did not. Right? I was I'm not that familiar with cottonwoods anyway, so you know, that limits me.
Well, yeah, I don't imagine they've got them there. But anyway, they grow really big. They're impossible to split for firewood. They're just really a trash tree. They had one on the Mississippi River just upstream from Alton, Illinois, where I grew up, that was the state took care of it because it was huge. I mean, it had, I don't know, two adult people could not reach all the way around it, and that's pretty wow. darn big for any tree.
Well, you mentioned Southern Illinois. Have you read Jeff Bigger's book, Reckoning at Eagle Creek?
No, I haven't.
I really highly recommend that to you if Southern Illinois means something to you emotionally or geographically, whatever, because he is from Southern Illinois, and he just documents, and it's out in paperback now, too, which makes it a lot more accessible. He documents the ongoing onslaught against these coal fields of Southern Illinois, practiced largely by people like Chris Klein and Peabody.
I had some friends at work down there, and there's a mine outside of a place called Glen Carbon.
Oh, yeah, and there, oh, look, Carbondale,
Carbondale, yeah.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot of strip mining down there, and they reclaimed the mines fairly nicely, I guess. Filled them with water, and it's pretty good fishing now, but it took a long time for it to.
Well, they haven't quit. They're going at it hammer and tongs now, largely done by Peabody and a renegade coal baron from West Virginia by the name of. Chris Klein, who's the guy trying to destroy the Pinokies up in.
You know, I know we used to.
Wisconsin.
There's a enormous coal burning plant, all right on the river, Mississippi River, just across the river from Alton, a little ways up. It's the Portage de Sioux plant.
Yeah.
My God.
My only experience with just about any portion of Illinois was a couple of visits to Cahokia.
Well, the Cahokia Mounds, yeah,
That's one of those places that just blows my mind.
And people drive by them every day, and they don't even give them a second look. I mean, they just look like big hills, but when you stop and think about what they actually are, my God, you know, they're still excavating. They'll be excavating those things for a long time.
No kidding. Well, Bill, it's awful good to hear from you. I've got another call sitting here, and we'll just try it. We'll hopefully talk again soon.
Okay, jump on it and see if you can get a rope around Ferg.
I will. Take care.
Okay, partner.
Bye-bye. Bill calling from Montana, and back to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Oh, this is Gary.
Hey, Gary, what's up?
Took time off from my normal routine to, I guess, moan and complain like everybody else.
It's good for the spirit at this point in time.
You stole my shtick, though. You stole it earlier in the program. I couldn't believe it. You know?
Oh, God, what have I done?
I was gonna call in and say, you know, I says, you know, Gary King, you lost the race against Susana Martinez. She got reelected. And pretty much it was a status quo out here, except for we lost a few seats in the House, and the Republicans have taken over the House out here, first time in 60 years.
Yeah, another place that's going to be hell among the yearlings.
So they got a slight edge in the House, and I guess we still control the Senate. But, you know, one of the first things on the agenda, a couple of things is you know, trying to push through right to work and repealing the state Davis-Bacon.
Oh, yeah, because all those workers making decent wages, that's just un-American, right?
Yeah, that's because now we can attract outside job creators, you know.
Right.
A bunch of crap. But anyway, I was going to say, well, I says, you know, I was going to go visit Bruce King's grave this morning, you know what I mean? But when I got up there, he's buried 10 miles north of Moriarty here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
King family ranch out that way. And then so I went out there, and the grave was empty, you know. So I stopped by the ranch on the way back. I says, Bruce ain't in the grave up there, you know. And he says, well, he got out of his grave, and he's got Gary out back whooping him behind him for running such a shitty campaign.
Oh, have you, honest to God, have you ever seen such a... In one time, such an aggregation of crummy... Answer me this if you can, because nobody else has been able. Where do these inept, clueless, can't-be-trusted-to-tie-their-own-shoelaces millionaire political consultants come from? Where do you go to school to become one of these losers?
I don't know. I live here at Moriarty, and this is basically... the hometown of the Kings and the Anayas, both former governors, you know. And, you know, I went and voted early, and I stopped by to see Mike and I, who used to be the state party chairman, and his brother Tony was governor out here, and I complained about the ballot to him. And when I walked in to see him, I told him, I heard Gary King died, you know. And he laughed, you know. And his daughter, Mickey, you know, and she goes, oh, geez, it's so terrible. What's going on, you know? And I says, well, what's going on here? I says, this guy running a campaign or not? And we had a fundraiser over there at his restaurant during the primaries, you know. And so I talked to him. You know, I gave him money then. But I'm going to tell you, I didn't see like Devin said, I didn't see a single flyer from the guy, the whole campaign, in the mail. I never even got a letter asking for more money. And I asked Mickey, I says, well, what's going on? I says, he says, he doesn't have any money. You know, so, and we had loads of outside money coming into the state. You know, I assume outside money, you know, running all these,
Yeah, and you guys have something kind of in common with us. There's not that many major media markets to buy TV ads in out there, are there? I mean,
exactly.
Albuquerque, Santa Fe.
Yeah, I think they bought it all up, I guess. That's what I asked Mike. I said, well, what the hell did they buy up? I said, I haven't seen I don't watch much TV outside of a little football, you know, but I expect it. But it's wall to wall Republican ads, you know, except for Tom Udall ran a few that I spotted, but everything else was, you know, from all the Republican candidates, especially Susana Martinez, or by these various groups, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That were...
the dark money bunch.
Pro Martinez or pro... Republican.
And that's one thing we can also take away from all of this, and that is last night also proved something to us insofar as the Republicans proved that they cannot win without cheating. They cannot win without Citizens United. They can't win without dark money. They can't win without the Koch brothers, without Crossroads GPS and Sheldon Adelson and that whole oligarchic gang of punks.
Well, it's not cheating anymore. It used to be years ago, but not no more. I mean, it's all...
Nah, you mentioned watching a little football. You can change the rules, but if they change the rules and say that it's okay for a cornerback to slip the shiv to a receiver who's about to catch the ball, I still call that cheating.
Yeah, well, I mean, but, you know, and, you know, but, you know, I guess the point was you know, he ran a bad campaign. I mean, he was getting beating the crap out of him, you know, constantly with the commercials, whether it was a Martinez campaign or, you know, these outside folks or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, he would just, you know, I didn't see any kind of response or anything. So, I mean, you know, you mentioned it earlier, which is what I was going to say. God damn it, we need to kick him in the balls, you know?
Yeah, we do. And us rank and file types, we're more than happy to do that. But we got to find somebody that somebody in the, you know, among our betters, you know, they think they are, who has a like-minded approach. Apparently, Gene Shaheen managed to, you know, poor old Scott Brown's been whipped by two women now. I mean, he may be, you know, his next gig may be a Viagra commercial.
Yeah,
but there just weren't a hell of a lot of them.
Even Tom Udall, I mean, he had one really good commercial, and that was where they caught this guy saying that, you know, he believed that there shouldn't be a minimum wage for anybody under 26. And he said, I guess they caught him speaking to somebody. And so what if you're making $4 an hour? So what? And so they ran that commercial, you know, kind of in a loop whenever they had some time, you know, but it seemed like, you know, there was 10 Republican commercials for every single time. I didn't see a single commercial for any of the other candidates other than, Tom Udall and then this one other guy, what was it for? Auditor or some damn thing? I can't quite remember.
Well, I don't know if your email please looked anything like ours did here, but you cannot scare progressive people into giving money. And I must have gotten 24 a day from the Ray Hall campaign and Nick Casey and Natalie Tennant. Friend, I have to tell you, the news isn't good. Oh, well, here, let me dig deep and get you $100. No!
I understand
that, but, you know, trying to motivate people through fear, you know, that works great from Republicans doing that to Republican rank and file. It works great because they're authoritarian and they're ruled by their lizard brains. It is not going to work among progressives for the same reason that, you know, Limbaugh-style talk radio doesn't work among progressives. But here we are doing this kind of radio, and we've been here for 10 years.
No.
You have to respect. No. You have to at least note the differences, the cognitive differences between the two groups because they are very, very real.
Yeah, but we're not fighters. We're just self-defeating. I mean, I was late tuning in to Mike Malloy because I knew what it was all going to be about, and then he was still ranting about. You know, I'm still an idiot because I voted, and I voted Democrat, and I'm getting tired of that shit. You know what I mean? I know one thing for a fact, okay? If you don't fucking vote, sorry my language, because it burns me up.
It's all right, it's the internet. You can do it.
If you don't vote, okay, you have no chance of influencing anything. None. If you don't participate. You sit on the sidelines. You're at the whim of those who rule, period. Case closed.
Well, I did see that. See that graphic the other day that said, "Not voting is not an act of rebellion; it is an act of surrender."
Absolutely.
And my personal
feeling. No, I don't give a shit.
I'm in line with that feeling. And like I said earlier, I'm just not going to buy into an argument that was first made by a pair of miserable, old, segregationist, racist white men, Strom Thurmond and George Wallace. They invented that no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats bullshit.
Yeah, and that Ralph Nader, he did the same shit and basically didn't run a serious campaign, but when he criticized anybody, he was criticizing Al Gore, you know. He could have had plenty to criticize Bush's record as governor in the state of Texas. But, you know, anyway, anyway, I just, you know, I had that, and I said, oh, man, this is going to be a good one. You know?
So
sorry to steal your thunder.
Go ahead and say this guy woke up or something about somebody came out of the grave, you know, something. I said, God damn, you just stole my life.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, great minds think alike.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, but we sent everybody back, you know, as far as Michelle Grisham and Lynn Wuhan and Tom Udall. You know, we didn't lose any of that, but we reelected Martinez and we reelected that bastard Steve Pierce.
Oh, Jesus.
You know?
Him.
And, oh, yeah, he's terrible. But what bugged me about it was, you know, the Democrats didn't run a goddamn campaign. You know, I mean, who ran a campaign saying, here's a guy that voted to shut down the government. Here's a guy who voted to default on your debt, you know, and drive the country into bankruptcy. You know what I mean? It was like, the media came up with the narrative, you know, well over a year ago about how the Democrats were in trouble after, you know.
Yeah, not even before the first vote was counted, before the first ballot was printed.
Yeah,
and, so, you know, let's do remember who owns the for-profit media. Hint, ain't Dennis Kucinich.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
I hate to.
No, please. Oh, God, don't get me going. I got to get out of here because I just realized I was enjoying our conversation so much I ran a minute over.
All right,
Gary.
Well, have a good night, and good night to everybody in the chat.
Thanks so much, and thanks for all your help. I appreciate it. We all do.
All right, no problem.
All right.
We have more coming your way pretty soon.
Thanks. Bye now.
I'm working on that. Bye.
And thanks to everybody for everything you do. Thanks to everyone who made all of this happen this evening. Thank you especially to Cindy. It was good to hear from you. I got to get out of here. Sorry, no credits, no nothing. Good night, y'all.